You've heard me rave about the Kel-Tec KSG shotgun for a long time, and the fact is, I cannot say enough good things about it. I mean, the KSG is the one that started it all, made ordinary shotguns obsolete, and still reigns supreme. But the big reason I keep raving about it is I'm also the proud owner of one, at least. And trust me, I really put the KSG to the test before adding it to my collection. It's perfect for home defense or tactical situations, and this 12-gauge is a reliable go-to that's easy to handle for everyone. The KSG shotgun is the first 12-gauge pump-action shotgun chambered for 3-inch shells, and with dual-tube magazines, offers a capacity of 12+1. Its downward shell ejection makes the KSG truly ambidextrous and ejects shells away from your face. It's compact, lightweight, and easy to maneuver and control. Learn more about the KSG shotgun at KeltecWeapons.com and follow Kel-Tec on social media. Visit KeltecWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C weapons.com.
I don't want to compare difficulties, but we have a little sense, Jill and I, what it's like to lose a home. Years ago, now 15 years ago, I was in Washington doing Meet the Press. It was a sunny Sunday. And lightning struck at home on a little lake. It's outside of our home, not a lake, a big pond. And hit a wire and came up underneath our home into the heating ducts, the air conditioning duct. To make a long story short, I almost lost my wife, my 67 Corvette, and my cat.
Can you spare me a moment to pick my jaw up off the ground? Just give me a second to pick the... All of our collective jaws are on the ground right now. Wow. That's the President of the United States. So he did go visit Hawaii yesterday. A brief little stop. And that soundbite, I thought it was a joke. I saw it online and I was like, no way. I actually thought it was a joke, and as it turns out, it was Biden. It was a very real thing. Whoo boy, I feel so bad for people in Maui right now because they have to deal with this guy. They have to deal with, you know, President Daddy Showers McUnity going out there and comparing. I mean, they lost an entire town. Not the same. Welcome to the show. Dana Loesch here with you. Top of this first hour on Tuesday. And that is, this is the thing, this is a crazy thing I saw this morning. So I started seeing it yesterday, if I'm being honest. But I saw, let me pull this up, I bookmarked it for myself. I saw a piece where Hawaiians, as he arrived, he was getting off, Air Force One, etc., getting his little motorcade. There were people who were standing along the side of the road with signs basically telling him to go do something unflattering to himself. All up in one side and down the other side of the road. People were livid. They said, too little, too late. Too little, too late, they said. And now he's going to come out and then he's going to give them this one upsman story. Listen to this audio soundbite too. This is some of them on the side of the road.
Over to my right, there are a bunch of people out here. They've been here for hours. A bunch of them are protesting. They have their makeshift signs, cardboard signs. A lot of them saying, as we've been talking about, that he's too late. Some of them feel that he should have been here much earlier. Other signs that say actions speak louder than words. So hearing a lot from the people here, as well as Hawaiian flags.
They're mad. And they have every right to be. I mean, oh my gosh. If it's not the, you know, East Palestine train derailment, if it's not flooding, if it's not, you know, one thing after another. And if you compare what happened with Katrina to this, I mean, this is, if everything that we're hearing about the potential fatality rate is correct, then this is going to be one of the biggest natural disasters in American history. And his response is embarrassing and offensive. I there's no word for it. No word for it. And especially when you look at some of this other stuff, like for instance, you know, the fact that You know, it had water equity play into it. All of these other additional layers to this story. I mean, he sits here and he's like, oh yeah, you know, he's talking to a rescuer there. Is this the one where he's watching the firefighters? Because he was there, this crazy, they called it a shambolic tour. And as he was surveying some of the devastation, he actually sort of just joked to one of the rescuers, oh, this is hot ground. That's, oh my gosh. Listen to this. Audio somebody, he got distracted by a dog, and then this is what he said to one of the rescuers.
What's the boss's name? I said, how you doing, pal? You guys catch the boots out here? That's some hot ground, man.
Oh my gosh. That's some hot ground, man. You don't have anything else to say? That's some hot ground, man. That's it? Oh my gosh. Oh, but it gets worse. Dana, how could it possibly get worse, you ask? Oh, just wait. Okay, I'm just going to play it. Audio Soundbite 6. I can't even set it up. Go ahead and roll this tape.
It's going to be hard. America's deadliest wildfire in over a century. And Jill and I have what's left, walked Front Street, what's left of it. We've surveyed the damage from the air as well. The devastation is overwhelming. To date, 114 dead, hundreds of people unaccounted for. I remember when I got the call, my first wife and daughter, I was a young senator, and I got a call in Washington. I hadn't been sworn in yet. I wasn't old enough. And I was hiring staff in the Capitol at Teddy Kennedy's office. And I got a phone call saying from my fire department, a young first responder, kind of panicking, you got to come home. There's been an accident. I said, what happened? He said, your wife, she's dead. Come home. A tractor trailer had broadsided her and killed her in a car accident along with my little daughter. And I remember...
I wonder how his actual current wife standing next to him feels every single time he brings this up. That's, you know, and then to sit here, it's like he's not sympathizing with people. It's like he's competing with them. That's what I take away from this. He cannot sympathize with people. He has no idea how. He is competing with them and, well, look, you have this grief. Well, here's my grief. But not as a way to sympathize. It's like a way to compete with them. It's bizarre. It's just shocking to me. I just feel so, and now you wonder why people are so damn angry. Why they're lining the sides of the road, because this is insane, is why. It's crazy. Comparing a kitchen fire to a blaze that's killed over 100 people. And actually, the fatality rate may be worse. They're still looking. Just horrific. A horrific natural disaster. And when you look at the way that it's been covered, the way that it's been reported upon, the way that it has been treated, all of these people that were responsible for carrying out their duties and helping to keep the population safe, because that's why people pay exorbitant taxes. All of this, they didn't do their job. They were worried about equity. They were actually bitching about, well, you know, water equity and going through this ridiculous Rube Goldberg machine of government bureaucracy to approve just basic life-saving maneuvers while a blaze was raging and killing people. And they're not going to make this a thing. He's on vacation. Ted Cruz got his backside handed to him because he went to Cancun during an ice storm in Texas. And then he turned right around and came back, which he should have stayed there, because they act like Ted Cruz was supposed to come with a de-icer and de-ice all of Texas. That's what they acted like. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. They've lost their damn minds. If a Republican president was at his, you know, private retreat or something like that when a disaster happened. Oh my gosh, they have a. But Joe Biden goes on not one but two vacations in the time that the fires have been blazing and raging and killing people and destroying everything, and not a peep from the press. Not a peep. They act like almost like he's not the president. It's kind of interesting. It's just the craziest thing I've ever seen. Never seen anything like it. We're going to talk more about this coming up. Also, 2024. Tomorrow's the debate. Now, I was scheduled to go and be at the debate, but I'm having a little difficulty in making the flights meet because the flight I booked, the only one I can do to get there while I'm still on air, actually, I would get there basically like 40 minutes. I would wheels down 40 minutes before doors close. And I've covered debates before when the doors close, security precaution, you're not getting in. So like, do I want to risk it and be locked outside of Milwaukee and have to watch the debate from a ratty motel that's right by the airport? I don't know. So we were kind of, there was no way to make it meet. That was like literally the only flight available that I could get. So if I don't, and I'll send out a subscriber email to you all about this. I might do a live chat during the debate. But the debate, pre-stuff for the debate. Now, this came out last night. Surrogates are no longer allowed in the debate spin room if you're not participating. Now, I think they should do something like this, because I think if you're not going to participate, then you can't send your surrogate to cover your ass. You just can't. If you're not going to participate, what? Don't put it in Slack. Just say it. Don't do this. I'm going to type it in Slack.
It wasn't the RNC.
It wasn't the RNC. Who was it?
I put that in Slack earlier this morning. It was Fox.
That's right. It was Fox. Fox had to do what Romney McDaniel wouldn't do. Did she ever respond to us, by the way? We reached out.
That's who told us whose decision it was.
But it wasn't, Rana. She couldn't make the decision because she doesn't want to make, I don't think she wants to make Trump mad because he endorsed her for the chair. But so Fox said that they can't have those surrogates in. Well, they're doing it with the GOP, I guess. So I do think it's a cop out. If you're not going to be at the debate, don't send a surrogate. I do agree with that. I think that's just bad. I think it's lame. I think it just looks cheesy. Honestly, you look like you're scared if you don't. Now, it may not be the case, but you can't have it both ways, right? Either go or don't go. I don't know. I mean, I understand his campaign's rationale for not going. If I'm being very, you know, very straight, no chaser about it, it probably benefits him better because he's going to get in a compromising position if he goes. I mean, first and foremost, I'm thinking of all the Georgia stuff. My gosh, you know, that's going to come out in a debate and then someone's going to bait him into talking about it and he doesn't have any mouth discipline. So he's just going to talk. He will hurt himself in court. So I get the campaign's rationale for that. However, you can't have it both ways. So, like, Carrie Lake was going to be there. I don't dislike Carrie Lake. She's been on the show. She seems very nice. But, I don't know. Is anybody else kind of getting burned out on some of this stuff and some of the... No, not by the press. Like, the press is not making Carrie Lake go out and do all this stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes there's oversaturation of people. You know what I mean? You disagree with me.
Yeah.
Kane loves him some Carrie. He has Kane plus Carrie scrolled.
No, I just think that, yeah, the media does play a big part of it. They'll put out small clips. They'll put her out in front of you a bunch of times. And then
You're not sitting here. Well, did they make them go out and do stuff? I agree with you to an extent.
I'm not saying they're making her go out and do stuff. Mm. What I'm saying is they are peppering you to the point of exhaustion with this. And that's what they do with everything they want you to be tired of.
Oh, I know. But I'm just saying she's everywhere, like absolutely everywhere. So it's and Juan literally is like in the corner going, world star. Yeah. But the thing is, I know we got to go. Steve's like, will you shut up? But I do think that she is literally everywhere. I don't think the media is putting her everywhere. If she sees a camera that goes on, and I think it is, she has news training. She just goes and does her thing. But
and she announced for Senate. So
I think that she is a little bit of an oversaturation. I don't dislike her, but here's what I'll talk more about this after headlines. But there is a serious downside, whether you like the candidate or not, in oversaturation. Because when people see you too much, they will turn on you. This is psychology. That you've seen this happen to how many different starlets in the United States, people start rooting for your downfall. And that has nothing to do really with the media, Kane. That's people overplaying their hand.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm making your point. I'm just saying I hate the media so much. Vivek is doing the same thing with saturation right now.
Yeah, and he's also like on both sides of the issue, which we're going to talk about. Does it seem like every time you turn around or open up your wallet, you're shocked at the changes that have directly impacted your life in just 2.5 years? There's something that you can do to protect the value of your hard-earned savings and retirement accounts. Contact the folks at American Hartford Gold and talk to them about your options in diversifying your assets. Empower yourself with opportunity. Hold on to the fruits of your hard work and protect your future. So do what I did and call the only precious metal dealers I trust, American Hartford Gold. Diversify your portfolio with physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside of your IRA or 401k. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So the former president has confirmed he's going to turn himself into the Fulton County Jail on Thursday, the day after the primary debates. That's all part of that crazy, the Georgia indictment. Well, you're going to get ready for another motorcade, nonstop aerial coverage. Trump stepped on the pavement. The pavement is, you know that's going to happen. Let's see. Talking points are out for the COVID push this fall. An alarming study finds COVID can trigger high blood pressure. You want to know what else can trigger high blood pressure? Talking to me about masks. Masks can also trigger getting punched in the face. Did you know that? There's like a scientific study that proves it. Yeah. States are looking to hire people who entered the country illegally to fatten struggling police departments, according to the Washington Times. So wait, hiring people who, and this is a California law, hiring people who broke the law to enter the country to enforce the law of the country? That makes all the sense in the world, California. They are going to obliterate themselves. They're already on the path. New York is building the world's tallest jail in Chinatown, according to The Guardian. It's going to be a big, ugly building. They said that it's going to be how many, like 300 feet. A new structure is going to be the tallest correctional facility in the world. This is weird. So Americans have rated, well, it's not weird, Dallas and Boston the safest of 16 U.S. cities. Okay, yeah, Dallas is pretty nice. Dallas is pretty, yeah, yeah. So Kane and I are like, oh, yeah, it's pretty nice. All right, coming up, Law and Order 2024 and more.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle Ready-to-Drink Coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
Our interests include Taiwan until we have achieved semiconductor independence. So yes, I will be very clear that we are fully prepared to actually see that through, that we will move for two Ohio-class SSGNs to the South, so the South China Sea, as well as to the Pacific. We will move destroyers through the Taiwan Strait. We will enter our alliance with India. We will pull Russia out of its military alliance with China by ending the Ukraine war. This is how we deter them. But after 2028, after the end of my first term, we will be in a position to say our commitments will be different. Xi Jinping will not go for Taiwan until the end of my first term.
Ooh, I got some stuff to say about this. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you, bottom of this first hour. That's Vivek Ramaswamy, who's having to answer a lot of questions. I said yesterday, if you listen to the program, and I also put out, this is why you need to subscribe, by the way, to Substack, Chapter and Verse, my newsletter, because you have the second part comes later today. The first part, will the real Vivek please stand up? It is, and literally he's held both sides of an issue on every single issue. And this actually isn't any different. And I talk about this one in depth later on today. But to address this soundbite, so this is just very, I mean, this is just, what, a few days ago. He was talking about Taiwan in a conversation about Ukraine. And I thought that it was a really bad comparison. It was a very bad comparison. I thought it was very crude in its simplistic understanding of the issue. And he has defended himself on foreign policy issues, saying, well, quote, let's just call a spade. I didn't know much of this 6 months ago. That's a direct quote from him from a conversation just the other day. Now, I kind of have a problem with that because I feel like that's not, you know, for parents with draft age kids, for people whose spouses or parents, you know, can be commanded by the commander in chief to go fight in a foreign war. I just feel like learning on the job isn't an assuring thing in times like these. And that's kind of what this is. We're facing a monumental geopolitical threat. Now, I also say this, too, as someone who has been a neocon or against neocons her entire life. And I've been anti-war until the last resort her entire life. And it's in many, many occasions has put me directly at odds with the Republican Party. And I've, you know, lost. There were people in the Republican Party that were kind of warming up to me. And then when I would disagree with them on some of this stuff, oh, no, they don't like me anymore. So I sit. But even I, here's the thing, even I understand the importance of maintaining alliances. And you maintain alliances because the really U.S. influence is part of the reason why it can be successful is the health of alliances. Having alliances means you don't have to go in and have a foreign war. It means you don't have to do some of this other stuff. It's peace through strength. Even I recognize the difference between foreign welfare and protecting alliances. And that's what this comes down to. And these are alliances, by the way, that the United States uses as a first layer of defense against foreign aggression. So I think that should, you know, also, you should mention that. Emboldening China and weakening allies has consequences. So the first thing I thought of when he said this, because he's basically saying, yeah, you know, I just let China have Taiwan. Again, I think the reasoning is crude in its simplicity, and I think it demonstrates a very limited understanding of tensions in this region. So as long as the tech bros get their chips, right? Because they were talking about superconductors. So as long as the tech bros get their chips, then it's okay for jackbooted commie thugs to go where they please, invade where they please. I mean, the U.S. has no interest in Ukraine. You can't compare Ukraine and Taiwan. There is no interest that we have in Ukraine. You will not be able to persuade me. You can have your opinion. I would agree with you, but we'll both be wrong. And we can't have that. I got to balance out the power of the earth here. It's a land dispute between a dying power and an area that was formerly under its control. Bottom line. Second, we are not reliant upon superconductor manufacturing or access through the South China Sea in Ukraine like we are with Taiwan. It's not just about superconductors. That's why I don't know why he just focuses on that. I mean, we stupidly rely on some dirty Russian oil and gas. Well, the EU, really. But Russia is not in any position to lay claim to a majority of oil and gas resources in the exact same way that China is in a position to and currently holds a monopoly on rare earth elements that literally fuels the entirety of the green agenda. And again, this is not third. It's not just about superconductors either. I mean, this is about maritime status quo through one of, if not the most important trade routes in the entire world. And China made it clear, very clear, that its ambition isn't just claiming Taiwan, but controlling that whole route, that whole area, the South China Sea. And so it's not just about superconductors. Emboldening China and weakening allies has consequences. So, for instance, you guys know the Five Eyes, right? The Five Eyes, that's the group of nations that they share intelligence, etc. They got called Five Eyes because of the secret, you know, eyes only. New Zealand is a member of Five Eyes. They could not bring themselves. Do you remember this? They could not bring themselves to condemn China for the treatment of the Uyghurs because they have a 30% export dependence on China. Now imagine if something really kicks off. I mean, you're talking to, appeasement doesn't work. That's what he's talking about. Appeasement of enemies has never worked ever. And how in the hell can this guy be tough on China, as he has said, while also giving them a green light to invade? This is the other thing. He talks about American manufacturing and, you know, all of that. And he says that he'd, you know, have our manufacturing and supply chains move from China. Except, you know, one of his companies, Roivant, ROI stands for return of investment, return on investment. They have several, and he still has a stake in this company. They have several Chinese subsidiaries. He absolutely has it. By the way, if you would like to see receipts, they're all published at Substack. He has a stake in that company still. They have Chinese subsidiaries. Now, we sit here and talk all the time about Joe Biden's family business dealings with China and whether or not he's compromised on that. Would that not be similarly so with a guy who's making millions of dollars off Chinese subsidiaries through one of his companies? I mean, can you hold simultaneously both positions? I think that's a fair question. And there are people out there who weekly try to defend him and say, oh, you're just attacking him. Excuse me. Excuse the hell out of me. No, no, no. This is a political contest. This is a guy who came from nowhere. He has no political record. He has not been vetted by the public. By God, it is our responsibility as citizens to vet candidates who want to go for the highest office in the land. You do not get to dodge questioning. You do not get to deflect. You either answer the questions and you submit to being vetted or get the hell out of the race. We're not doing this attack. They're attacking. This is called vetting. This is what free people get to do to people who want to lead them. Now, I got a lot of questions about that exchange. That's not the only question I got. Can we play? Let's roll audio soundbite. This is 13. This is pretty amazing because he's talking about the inheritance tax. And this is one of the pieces that you got last night, the death tax. Again, this is a guy who talks a very good game about the American dream. He did this interview where he was arguing for a minimum 59% tax. And then he cited a well-known socialist named Thomas Piketty. Listen to this audio.
You are embracing, you correct me if I'm wrong, an inheritance tax rate of at least 59%. Fair?
So this is a thought experiment in this book. It is unimplementable in the current U.S. system.
Why didn't you say that in the
Here's
book?
Actually where
would,
I come out.
Would you, if you could?
I would not in that narrow context because of the consequences of it. But I stand by the thought experiment in this book, which was this. Look, and this goes to exactly why on the affirmative action topic, I've also said I would let go of legacy admissions at Harvard. I want an even playing field. I say this as somebody who's earned many hundreds of millions of dollars over the course of my life. I believe that if we could all have a low to non-existent flat tax rate over the course of our lives.
What does this have to do with the inheritance
tax? Trade that off.
Answer the
to
question
say
that
each
you
generation
asked.
Starts in the same place.
Because it sounds like he doesn't believe that you should be able to inherit anything. He goes on. And I have the transcript and the link to the whole thing if you would like to see it over at Substack. He talks about the inheritance tax. He says, quote, an inheritance tax is a way of redistributing duty. And he goes, 2 points here. He says, you know, those who become rich owe it to everyone else to preserve meritocracy so others have the chance to do the same. First, their success should be proof that the system is in fact working. If they can make money through merit, others can too. Second, people have moral duties apart from those that should be enforced by the state. And he goes on to say, you know, someone talks about moral duty. He was asked about the 59%, and he was asked directly about that. And he says, quote, if anything, I take the figure Piketty and say as arrive as a minimum. We shouldn't allow people to become billionaires just by having rich parents, end quote. So you're citing a socialist. Those are his, that's his direct quote. That's the only clip of the exchange that exists. The entire transcript I have linked for you at Chapter and Verse over at Substack. So he's saying, he talks on one hand about the American dream, and then on the other hand, he literally cites a socialist and calls for a minimum, by the way, minimum of a 59% death tax. Meaning that the government, he thinks, should be the beneficiary of your life's hard labor and not your own family. That when you die, you don't get to make you don't get to determine what happens to the fruits of your labor while you're living. even if that includes going to your children upon death? Why the hell do you think people work so hard? Do you think that if I was told that everything I worked hard for had to go to the government, I'd be on welfare? I would have no incentive, no motivation, and no one else would either. This is anti-capitalist, and he tries to cover his butt and give himself some plausible deniability by saying, oh, well, in the beginning, but then it's dragged out of him. He's like, well, you know, it wouldn't work, you know, maybe totally practically. Well, then why are you citing it? And by the way, in your book, which I read this part of it because I wanted to make sure that this was correct, you didn't actually add that caveat in there. So I got questions. This is what I'm talking about. You have somebody who comes out of nowhere and people want him to be like the new conservative thought leader. But you have no idea. Did you know that he wanted to tax you? 59% death tax? Imagine if the kids inherit the family farm. Hell, they'll have to sell it just to pay the tax on it. Does that sound like the American dream to you? Doesn't to me. That's just the tip of the iceberg. I could sit here for 2 days worth of shows, all 3 hours, and go over all of this. In fact, all of the information that I had from the stuff that he said and then changed on and then this and that, I had to break it up into two parts because Substack said it was too long to send. Every day we hear about another familiar brand undermining their customers and going, quote, woke. Americans are sick and tired of having far-left propaganda jammed into every product they consume. And for years, they've dumped millions into far-left causes, and everybody had to kind of take it because you needed a cell phone and probably thought that there was no alternative. Well, there is, and that's Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offering dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to in your area, minus the far-left propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending a message that you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, our military, veterans, and first responders. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today using offer code Dana and ask about their coverage guarantee while you're there. Get the same dependable service and take a stand for your values. Make the switch today. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Patriot.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Brian Shantz, our senator, Senator Mazie, by the way, Mazie, I told my granddaughter, whose name is Mazie as well, she said, that's why I like her. Anyway, but her name is Mazie as well. And Jill Takuda, Representative Ed Chase.
He's literally mispronouncing every name of all of these Hawaiian officials. Guys, he just looks bad and sounds bad. You can't sit here and argue with me otherwise. No one looks at that and goes, oh, yeah, he sounds fine. He looks okay. Mm-hmm. Who does that? Who thinks that he looks and sounds fine?
Not me.
Nobody. It's bad. It's bad. He does not. Do you think that inspires all of the people that are gathered there who have nothing left, have literally, they've lost family members? Does that inspire hope and confidence in them? That guy's shuffling out there. He doesn't sound together. He doesn't sound healthy. He doesn't sound well. But his family and the left are hell-bent. That's more important than leading people through a crisis. It's what it seems like. That's the message that's being sent. The absolute message being sent. It's just shameful. And I can't. I was looking at this other piece, you know, Jason Momoa, who I think tries too hard. Jason Momoa tries too damn hard. I just remember when he got real mad at Chris Pratt, because he saw Chris Pratt with a water bottle, and then Jason Momoa decided, because he's so thirsty for affirmation, that he decided to go on this rant about, dude, I thought you were smarter. You have a plastic water bottle. And then the internet was like, that's a little bit cringe. Here's all the times you were with a plastic water bottle, Jason Momoa. So he was telling everyone, stay the hell out of Hawaii, you know, blah, 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 all this stuff. Well, apparently a bunch of Hawaiians were like, ignore Jason Momoa. We need your tourism dollars. Just saying. I mean, one of the locals who owns Fat Daddy Smokehouse, a barbecue restaurant, says, quote, everyone here depends on the tourism industry. It's a fact. The guy who comes to fix my air conditioner depends on me feeding tourists. And one local business owner said, quote, we barely scraped by during COVID. I don't know how we're going to come back from this. We need people to come and enjoy Maui in order to feed our families. I mean, I just like the, stop it. Stop it. Like, why do like, have you seen Jason Momoa and these others? There was one celebrity who was vacationing, like, on the other side of Maui where there were no fires and they were blasting. Who was it? Paris Hilton or somebody? And they were blasting her because she was dared to vacation there. And, like, you're so heartless. Like, she was there before everything started. What do you think that she's going to go blow some, like, powder puff pink out of her mouth and, like, calm all the fires? Like, what the hell do you think is going to happen? Good grief. And it was the people like the Momoas out there. Just stop, dude. He just tries too hard. I don't want to dislike him. I don't want to dislike him, but I need him not be stupid, right? Don't make me dislike you. I really want to like you, dude. Come on. Stop. Help me help you. We have a lot more coming up in the second hour. Not just Maui. We have Law and Order. Imagine being asked to limit your murders to just non-working hours. That's what they're asking criminals in Chicago. We're going to talk about that coming up. We also have more on the Vivek Deep Dive. And the mask mandates. One Atlanta college brings them back. Rutgers has brought them back. Hollywood Lionsgate Studios, they're asking their office staff to don face coverings again. I will get dragged to jail. And I will take you all with me. So help me. And by the way, please note that it is the observance of Ruby Ridge today. So let's not with the government mandates. We got a lot to get into coming up in the second half. That's a nice lead-in, isn't it? There's a lead-in for you. People are tired of it. Kids are back to school. They don't want to keep their faces covered. So we're going to dive into all of that. And we got a Florida man on the way. Don't go anywhere. More of the Dana Show coming up.
Because the fact of the matter is there's a beast at our door, and that's the beast of climate change.
Oh,
it seems like the whole world is on fire. We need to defend ourselves from climate change. We need to decarbonize our economy so these fires don't ravage us.
Not
enough fire trucks in the world to protect us if we don't stop climate change.
So, oh my gosh. So that's Governor Jay Inslee. We've got to decarbonize our economy, he says. I got to make fun of this a little bit. Meh him anyway. Welcome back to the show. Top of the second hour. Dana Lash with you. Listen coast to coast. You can also stream the radio program and catch the simulcast as well. DirecTV, also YouTube, Facebook. We got to fight climate change. Whenever I hear people say, we got to fight climate change, like Governor Jay Inslee here, why does he stick his head out like that when he talks? Do you notice that? It's like very turtle-ish. I don't get that. But whenever I hear politicians say that, you know what I think of? I think of someone literally with a sword going out and just like waving it at the wind. Fighting the weather, fighting climate change, waving a sword or something out, or just like, you know, maybe like what Joe Biden says, going out with your shotgun shooting off into the air. Yeah. Fighting climate change. So brave. Got to decarbonize. You know, I didn't know that climate change was the name of the guy who like wouldn't give people water because he was worried about equity as fires were burning people up. Do you guys know that? I didn't know that. Do you know that? Do you know that, Kane? I guess it was his name, right? Wasn't that his name?
Yeah.
I mean, just saying. But they need it to be about climate change because they would have to indict themselves for inaction. That's the problem. I mean, they would have to, like, for instance, to go back to this Hawaiian official, Kaleo Manuel, the now former deputy director of Hawaii Commission on Water Resource Management. I mean, he waited hours upon hours to release water to fight wildfires. What does that have to do with climate change? I mean, it's like the label you slap on anything that you don't want to take accountability for. I mean, who runs Hawaii, Kane?
Democrat.
Yeah, who runs Maui?
Democrat.
Uh-huh. What party do you think this dude is?
Democrat.
Oh, it's probably climate change. Oh, well, wait, what? No. He waited for hours, a whole work day. He waited for the entirety of an entire work day to release water during the, oh, it's climate change. Gotta fight it. Are you telling me to go fist fight Kaleo Manuel? Because that's what you're that's what you're telling me. That's not climate change. That's him. What did he say? Can you play that one? I know you're gearing it up.
I have.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Go ahead. I knew you were going there. Do it.
Oh, of course it doesn't want to work now.
Oh, it doesn't want to work. He had said, quote.
I have it, though.
He said, well, you just let me know. You just play it.
Right.
How we as humans in an island can reconnect to that traditional value set. So really my motto is always like, let water connect us and not divide us. Like we can share it, but it requires true conversations about equity.
See, like I identify as a fish, so I need more of it. Where you are not a fish, so you get less. Like that? Because that's what, if that's what the world gets to, that's what I'm doing. Oh, I'm sorry. I identify as a fish. I identify as a Humboldt squid. I need lots of water. I mean, why not? Because I can. That's what you guys said. Don't question my science. But that's apparently, that doesn't sound like climate change. That just sounds like a dumbass. Right?
Yes.
That guy's a Fruit Loop. That's not climate change. That's not how that works. Or what about Hawaiian Electric being told for 4 years, hey, guys, it's kind of, we're in a dry season. You know, maybe make sure your power lines aren't emitting sparks. Yeah, okay, we'll get on that real soon. 1 year later. Hey, guys over at Hawaiian Electric, just, hi, it's us, forestry management researchers. Hi, just, you know, remember we told you a year ago to check your power lines for sparks? You know, well, here in Hawaii, we go through seasons. You know, you got a wet season, you got dry season. We're in a dry season again. This looks ripe for wildfire. Yeah, okay, we'll get right on that, guys, you nerds. We'll get right on it. Another year later. Yeah, it's us again. Here over at Forestry Management. Still see you haven't checked those power lines. Yeah, shut up now, nerds. 4 years later. Oh, my gosh! Wildfire! Yeah, I mean, you were told. But, hey, that's climate change. Climate change for you. That's not climate change. That's being a dumbass. That's not climate change. We can't just start saying, oh my gosh, climate change for everything. Can you believe it? I accidentally didn't put out the fire all the way at the campground and it burned down the whole damn forest. That climate change. Doing all those things to us. Gosh. Stubbed my toe the other day. Damn climate change. This is how bad it's getting. Let me just illustrate to you how bad it is getting, pushing everything on climate. I have this story. This comes by way of the hill. I'm just going to read it. Students' test scores, already beleaguered, face new threats from extreme heat. Because, see, it's the climate change that is causing students bad grades. That's an actual story where they are saying that climate change is responsible for student learning and test scores down. Huh. So, and it's weird because it's only in public schools. It's so weird. Climate change just skips over some of the other stuff. And it's weird because it is disproportionately affecting kids. That's the other weird thing. So like if a kid is in a bad school where teachers really aren't accountable, there's more climate change there that's making their grades bad. It's not the teachers or administrators at all. It's the climate change. Do you guys know that? Crazy, isn't it, Kane? I mean, everything is climate change's fault. That's the problem. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Students are struggling because of climate change. That's right. I mean, you look at these test scores, these students, they said that, wow, it's weird because as we're coming out of summer, this is basically what one teacher said, or an assistant professor at UCLA, quote, I'm basically going to say what she said. It's weird because when we come back to school out of summer, being that we're in basically a damn desert, it's hot. Affects our test scores. What? Here's an actual sentence. Extreme heat negatively affecting student outcomes has been well documented for years, but climate change is driving the problem to new heights.
Stop it already.
New heights! For instance, this is a woman from Stanford. She says, quote, "It's a bigger effect for minority and lower-income students, possibly." So she actually threw possibly in there. "They don't have as much air conditioning or cooling access either." Where is this?
How do they run AC and air conditioning, all that stuff? This takes electricity, right?
The thing they hate.
That runs on what? Like coal?
But did they just, did they do a study on this? Or did they just go, black people must not have air conditioning? I mean, how do they come up with this? I mean,
clown world.
It is clown world. I mean, they're blaming this on climate. Everything is because climate change. So if you were thinking, okay, fine then, what do we have to do to fight it? Well, you have to give your money to these people. What? Yes. Give them all your monies. They'll shoot it at the sun and appease it. Like a virgin to a volcano. there's so many things that are blamed for this. Everything. You got something wrong in your life? It's a damn climate change. Girlfriend dump you? Climate change. Didn't get that promotion? Climate change. Stub your toe? Climate change. Did you burn your eggs this morning? Climate change. Everything's because of climate change. It couldn't possibly be because of mismanagement. And Canada, they literally ignored years of these conservationists and forestry researchers saying, oh my gosh, for the love of all things holy, will y'all please clean up your forest floor? It's basically kindling. Acres and acres of kindling. You got a whole damn tinder box up here. Can y'all clean it up? Canada said, yeah, we'll get right on that, eh? And then didn't. And then it burned and everyone's screaming and, oh my gosh, it's climate change! It didn't do that. It didn't set those conditions. You did. Because you're a dumbass. You did it. Nobody, but they can be like, it's not our fault. Better give us more of your money. We didn't do that. Imagine living in Chicago. I know. I'm sorry if you do. It's a beautiful city that it's being ruined. So in Chicago, one of the older women there, Maria Haddon, is asking, please, gang. She made a very polite request to gang members. I mean, this is reasonable, right? I mean, she said, guys, can you please limit your murdering between 9 a.m. and 9 p.m.? Keep it after working hours because we don't want people being involved in your high-risk activities. That's what she said, high-risk. She literally asked gang members to stop shooting at each other during working hours so that others did, I'm quoting, so that others are not involved in high risk activities, end quote. Pretty high risk job there. Oh yeah, I got a lot of risk in my job. You do? Oh yes, there's all lots of risk. What's your job? A gang member. Wow. Do you think they're going to listen? What gang member? I mean, you're shooting and killing people over petty turf disputes and drugs. Are you really going to go, oh man, I was going to pop a cap in you, but, you know, this nice lady asked me if I would wait until after 6. So I'm not going to pop a cap in you now. I'm going to pop said cap in you after 6 p.m.
I think it's 9 p.m.
Oh, 9 p.m. Sorry. After 9 p.m. Because, you know, I don't want other people involved in my high-risk activities. Not criminal activities, but high risk. High risk of getting shot. The hell, high risk? Like, you act like there's, like, some insurance culpability or something there. Oh, high-risk activities? I mean, I'm thinking of, like, jumping down out of an airplane or something like that. No, not getting shot by a drug dealer. Not that kind of high risk. I love how Chicago considers high-risk activities getting shot by gangs. Just your basic high-risk activities. Come to Chicago for the gangs. I mean, so we're begging gangbangers, can you please limit your murderings till after working hours? Please. Just with the murders. I mean, so basically, after 9 p.m., it's the purge. All bets are off. All the gangbangers are waiting. Everything's loaded. And they're watching the clock. Tick, tock, tick, ding, ding. It's 9 p.m. Y'all gonna die. I mean, is that how they do it? Oh, my gosh. Imagine if that was your older person.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I gotta say, I love that Steelers Wheel song because it's in one of my favorite movies of all time, Reservoir Dogs. And that just is a whole mood. That song is now a whole mood. All right, let's get to headlines. We got a whole bunch of other stuff to do. All right, Russia's, we talked about the Russia, they fell all apart with their moon landing. I wanted to get into the, the giraffe. Spotless giraffe, thought to be the only one in the world. Aww. Born in a Tennessee zoo. It just looks like a weird horse without the spots. Am I the only one who thinks this? I looked at that and I was like, it's a horse. It's not. They think it's, it has a long neck, obviously. They said giraffes are very rarely born without their mottled appearance, and that primarily serves, they said, as a form of camouflage in the world, out in the natural world. And they said that this is like the first time they've seen anything like this, and they think it's the only one like it in the world. And so it's in a Tennessee zoo. That's actually kind of cool. It's in a Tennessee zoo. Also, a couple of other things to hit. I was telling you that Hollywood is bringing back masking and Atlanta College. Yesterday we had in the headlines that Rutgers was bringing back masking and Atlanta College is now bringing back COVID mask mandates. They said that it's going to, in Seattle, they're calling for face coverings to be compulsory for healthcare workers because of the new scary variant called BA286 or something like that. Right? Is that... Oh, wait. BA.2.BA86. That sounds right. Yeah, I feel like that's correct. I feel like that's the correct thing. So that's the variant that they're all trying to... They're trying to say that we have to have the masking and all of this other stuff. Let's see. Red flags are waving for tech stocks as AI bounce fades. China's fears escalate. China's not doing well. At all. They're not doing well. We're going to talk about this coming up, but the American Medical Association is suggesting that a $300,000 uterus transplant would help men who want to be women. I am going to go off on this. They said, oh, yes, we need to reduce the cost of the surgery, for the men who identify as women. We want to help them have children. That's not how that works. Stick with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Doing reporting through social media is idiotic. Don't use social media. Do not rely on people who fancy themselves as influencers. The word influencer, right off the bat, suggests that they want to influence you.
Get off your phone. Get off your tablet.
Thinking about ways for the state to acquire that land.
Right now, Pete, I can tell you that, to my knowledge, we here at Fox are the only national media in West Maui.
So this is this is weird. These are Hawaiian officials telling people, just listen to us, the government. Don't listen to those influencers. Don't listen to those. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here with you. And then, Kane, tell us this little... I'm pulling up the screenshot. Because... So this was an email that was sent to one reporter. It's from FEMA, dated August 19th. And it's from Justin Knighton, Director of Office of External Affairs, FEMA. Says, quote, out of respect for those who perish, we're asked by Maui County officials to pause on posting on social media and elsewhere any new imagery of damaged disaster debris starting now. They are asking for a full stop on disaster imagery going forward. We've not been asked to take photos or video down. Our team is on the ground coordinating with the county, et cetera, et cetera. And they're trying to say, oh, cultural sensitivity. Don't post anything. This is weird because this was sent on the 19th, today's the 22nd, it was announced that Biden was going to be visiting Hawaii before the 19th. So that's weird. How does that work? And I it's like they're trying to keep it under wraps. Like they don't want people to know how bad it is, like some of these officials. And we were talking about this on break. When Hurricane Katrina happened, or really, like, think of like any hurricane, any, you know, storm, what is the one thing that we're missing from coverage of Maui? Actually, a lot, but where are like the Anderson Coopers and Waiters? For real, where are those guys at? Or going through the charred debris? Where are the stories of people who have lost everything? Or people who are looking for missing families? Maybe they can't connect with some of the people and their family that they can't locate because, you know, you've had telephone poles just, they've been taken out by the fire. Everything's burned up. Don't you think it would help to have like more media out there? But where is that at? Where are all of those people? You don't see that, do you? I don't see it. Have you seen it? Nope. I haven't seen anybody out there doing any of this. There's always like wall-to-wall coverage of this stuff, except now. That is weird. Now, I don't believe the cultural sensitivity thing because I feel like that sounds racist. They're like, oh, well, we could cover everyone else's stuff because, you know, they were white and black. And, you know, this is a Polynesian. These are more Polynesian people, Hawaiian people. So, you know, we can't do that because of them. That's just, it sounds bigoted, doesn't it? It just sounds like a lame excuse. Don't say it unless you want to sound like a racist. Shut up. It sounds bad. It sounds like a scapegoat. It sounds like, oh my gosh, literally everything is Democrat. Democrat, you know, policies, everything, all the way down to water allocation, all the way down to who runs electric, all the way down to the state regulations governing said electric, all of this stuff. I mean, and especially when it's been so easy for some news outlets to come out with these stories saying, look, here are the receipts of literally 4 years of Hawaiian Electric being warned about this stuff. People warning them and saying, oh my gosh, guys, you know, this, there, you have to manage the ground. Gosh, where my family's from in southern Missouri, they would do some controlled burns sometimes. They always, that was a big thing that my grandpa had cattle. And he had cattle, he had goats, they had some guineas, which were hysterical and loud, and I kind of want one. I actually want a peacock. I want a guard peacock because it's America. That's why. Don't ask me. I want a guard peacock. I mean, how funny would that be? That'd be hysterical. Neighbors would hate me. That was a big thing. They would have to clear brush like regularly. That was the thing that they did regularly. And my cousins had to help. So like when in the summers, all of us grandkids would be, you know, with our family in the Ozarks, and we'd be down at grandma and grandpa's house. And it would, you just because you were at grandma and grandpa's house all summer, God love them, because they had 23 grandkids. I'm like related to half of southern Missouri. I'm not joking you. Like, if you're listening to me and you're in southern Missouri, we're probably cousins. I'm not even joking. I'm deadly serious. I have our family so huge. And that's just one side of, that's just my mom's side with grandma and grandpa. And not even in my grandpa's side, my grandma's side. It's crazy. But when you would go and stay, they'd keep all their grandkids. And the older ones, you still had chores. You had chores to do at grandma and grandpa's house. Don't think you're going to go down there and loaf. You had chores to do. Like, you were cutting wood. You were helping in the garden. You were fixing food. You were doing laundry because they hung their laundry out. They actually did because grandma didn't like dryers. She also didn't like a fabric softener, one of my uncles famously would joke about. And you had to go and help grandpa out in the pasture, and you had to help them with the brush and the property and do all of this stuff. I mean, we were young and we were told, you got to clear this stuff out because, you know, what happens if we're in a drought and there's a fire? It's going to burn every damn thing around here. I mean, we knew that, and we were kids. You know, this is not like the 1800s. You know, it's not like, you know, we're pioneers and settlers out there. I mean, just like basic understanding of land management. And they didn't need the government to tell them to do this. They just had their own well-being. That's one of the problems with, I think, too, the government taking up so much damn land, federal land, because the government can't obviously manage the federal land. Landowners manage their land. That's for sure. But you wanted to make sure that your land was in good condition, and you kept up with it. And yeah, my cousins had to, they had to clear brush and all that stuff. I had to help in the garden, and I would help grandma get stuff ready for dinner, and I had to help with laundry. I mean, you did chores. They put you to work. But you had all your cousins with you, so it was kind of fun, you know? It was like a, it was a fun thing. But, and it's hard. I mean, it's hard work, but it's, you know, then you get to see your land looks nice. You don't have to worry about stuff going up in flames. You don't have to worry about your, you know, your livestock, all that. And that's not what our government, that's definitely not what our government teaches. That's why there's a difference between environmentalists and conservationists. But this thing with FEMA sending out this letter and the absence of wall-to-wall coverage on all of this, this is, I find it despicable. Because the media, if it bleeds, it leads. That's an old saying that I did not invent. And I remember the first time I said it, all these people in the press jumped on me. They were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she said that. I'm like, are you kidding me? This phrase is older than I am. Like, than you. If it bleeds, it leads. Now, normally they like that. But with this, no. They got to, because they don't want to hurt them. They're all out. I mean, it's, everybody knows their ideology. I mean, you can't sit here and talk about refusal to properly care for your land and then blame climate change when you actually caused a situation to become worse. You're culpable. But where's the wall-to-wall coverage? Where are the reporters out there? Where are they at? Where are the people in the boots and the fire suits and all this other stuff? Where are they? I hope this comes up at the debate. Now, speaking of the debate, I had part one that came out because I feel like there hasn't been a candidate since Mitt Romney in 2012 that's flip-flopped on more issues. And I just wish that, because there was a story that came out and they were saying, oh, he's a stalking horse, and that was the agreement, and he was friends with Kushner, and he was asked about that. And you know, I don't doubt it. I mean, to me, I think it's obvious. That's my opinion. I'm speculating on that, but that's my opinion, because that's just what it feels like to me. But I just think when you come out of nowhere and you, people are trying to get gauge where you are on the issues, you can't complain when they're asking you why your statements now literally contradict your statements from a couple of weeks ago. I told you about the Juneteenth stuff with Vivek Ramaswamy. The COVID vaccine stuff, can I talk about this for a moment? Because we're going to be getting into masking and all of that. We talked about the death tax. When he was not pushing the coronavirus vaccine that he helped to create and tried to sell, He tried to sell this biomedical surveillance database. He wanted to track patient records with his Rovion, ROI, return on investment, his subsidiary Datavant. And they worked to develop all of this. And without patient consent. One of the things in some of the reporting on this is that some companies were happy to contribute to Datavant's endeavor, citing the national emergency. But others balked at the idea because they were worried about privacy concerns and how it violated patient consent standards. His Roivant Sciences, the company that was coming up with this biomedical tracking, they were tracking everything with the testing and the shots. They wanted a single repository of all real-world medical data because thanks to the national data infrastructure. He still has a stake in this, by the way. He only just stepped down in February to run. You realize this, right? He was CEO just until February of this year. He stepped down to run. He had partnered with Pfizer numerous times. And they literally said that in a cover story in Forbes, quote, this will be the highest return on investment endeavor ever taken up in the pharmaceutical industry. That's kind of a problem. I mean, as it relates to mRNA stuff, he's actually in a lawsuit right now with some of the big pharma because their company was saying that it was somehow infringing upon their property with the lipid, whatever, one of the facets of the mRNA tech. I'm just saying, there's a lot of stuff here, and especially as we're getting into this mask mandate stuff coming back again and all of these other headlines cropping up, I think it's very timely to look at this. I mean, I feel like he has said two things to two groups of people. And when he decided suddenly to run, you know, he waited until he stepped down to make his run. He, you know, was trying to scrub his timeline. He was a George Soros fellow. He scrubbed his timeline of that. And that also had to do with a lot of the pharmaceutical stuff. I mean, there's a lot of questions to ask here, guys. And I don't know why you're not allowed to ask it. I don't know why it's like, oh, well, you're attacked. I mean, he had COVID. He literally paid somebody to have COVID-related work scrubbed from his Wikipedia page. All of the work that he did with the vaccine and the database and all of this other stuff. He's praised George Soros. I've got screenshots coming out later today. I mean, they're suing Serovian Sciences, which he's, again, still a stakeholder. They're suing over their mRNA tech. They're suing Moderna and Pfizer over patented COVID vaccine technology. And they're and he founded and is still a stakeholder again in Roivant Sciences. And he literally just like stepped down. He was chairman until February of this year and just stepped down. Just saying, I just got some issues here. So I hope this comes up in the debates, especially, you know, this is the guy, Vivek Ramaswamy. He called Bernie Sanders' COVID mask bill, quote unquote, sensible in a tweet supporting the idea. Then he got mad because he was asked about tweeting this. And I have that tweet up, too. He responded to Bernie Sanders, quote, urgently calling for simple, common sense, practical masks for all. Ramaswamy said, my policy views don't often align with Bernie, but this strikes me as a sensible idea. And then he denied saying it while claiming that he opposes mask mandates. And he got mad at people who said you literally typed this with your hands and tweeted it. And then he wrote in favor of mask mandates in a Wall Street Journal editorial, saying that while they probably slow the spread, we should stop wearing them so we don't create a super variant. He said that, quote, we should end mask mandates and social distancing in most settings, not because they don't slow the spread, because they probably do. What? We got issues here. And this guy has not been vetted. He was pushed as a stalking horse for another candidate, and he was not vetted.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Oh my gosh, this is a way to get killed. A Florida man arrested told deputies he's just a friendly guy after allegedly inappropriately touching two kids on a beach. Police say the man became belligerent when he was questioned. He was arrested Saturday. He approached several people at the beach, including two young girls. 57-year-old John Eddington. He was intoxicated and wandering around New Smyrna Beach and Daytona Beach when he began touching other beachgoers, multiple victims and witnesses. He approached a 9-year-old on the shoreline while the mother was in the ocean, rubbed his hands over her body before the mom was able to get to shore and confront him. Oh my God. And then he targeted an 8-year-old girl and touched her the same way. I would have murdered him on the beach. Yeah. I would have killed this dude. I'm not even joking you. He would have literally been fish food. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I got to tell you, the fact that he was able to walk away and target someone else, there's some restraint there on behalf of some people. Because normally, if a group of people realize that kids are being targeted, that doesn't go well. Now, when police, and they got this on camera, they got their body camera footage, when they engaged him, he became super belligerent when they started asking questions. And so he was arrested. And this guy. I don't like people who target kids, and I don't like animal abusers. Neither. Let's see. This is it. Okay. A Florida man pistol whipped a woman and opened fire because she interrupted his voodoo ritual. What? It's in Orlando. Okay. This happened on August 15th, and the law enforcement calls it a perplexing case. His name is Fennell DeLexis, and he was engaged in a voodoo ritual in the confines of his home, or voodoo style, which it probably means voodoo ritual. And it took a drastic turn when a female victim who also lives in the house disrupted it. She put out his candles with water. Okay, well, that didn't make that dude happy. And Alexis and the victim got into it, and he had a baton, and he whooped her, and then he got his gun out, and he hit her with it, and then fired multiple shots. Police swiftly reached the home, guided everyone out of the house. She emerged. She had significant. The man himself also got significant injuries during the altercation because Our Lady whooped him. She whooped him up pretty good. But the incident didn't spare the victim's younger brother. He got a grazing gunshot wound during the whole thing. So they took Delexis in on a range of serious offenses, attempted felony murder with a firearm, aggravated battery, aggravated assault with a firearm, and various counts of child abuse. Dang, that's crazy. Man, I mean, I just, yeah, but she apparently, like, she didn't even have a weapon and she whooped him up pretty good, but she had worse injuries. So obviously, we have more in store. Third hour on the way. Missouri's Attorney General will join us later on as well. Stick with us.
What I would like you all to do as hard hitting investigative reporters at the Place for Politics is get somebody, probably a young person, during this debate this week, to ask any of these guys and gal running for president what they're going to do about climate change.
Oh, my gosh. Well, if Bill Nye can identify as a scientist, I guess I can, too. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. Top of this third hour. That's Bill Nye saying, we've got to ask him about climate change. He's not a real scientist. I love the defense of this guy because they go, oh, you know, you're not your major. So Bill Nye can too be a scientist. No, no, no. He's a mechanical engineer, but he calls himself a science communicator. Shut up. He's like, he's passing off fake scientific credentials for as an appeal to authority. He's literally playing into appeal to authority as a way to be taken seriously and avoid any kind of having his positions contested. But he doesn't even have science credentials. I mean, he's a mechanical engineer, but he's not like an actual scientist. Scientific American slammed him a couple of years ago. And they said, quote, a scientist, they cannot understand why that anyone would lend their community's credibility to a guy who's not a scientist. They said he uses his public persona as a science entertainer. That's what they said. They blasted him. They're like, why does he, we're done, where they said that they're done keeping their heads down and their mouths shut. I mean, it's kind of funny, but he, like, I don't get it. Like, why have him on? He's not an actual scientist. Not at all. Ask them during the debate. Well, he was talking on MSNBC, who is not even hosting the debate. So I was going to be at the debate Thursday and we were trying to get everything mapped out. But after doing radio, and you know, obviously my obligation is and my priorities are you guys first. There's no way to make the flight on time to get there and get in the venue. And I was talking to Kane and Juan about this because I've been at so many debates before. When I was the token conservative at CNN, I was at a ton of debates. I've been at stuff with Fox, and it's the security's usually ridiculous. I mean, it's necessary. You know, you got crazy security, and then you have to go through all the different levels because, you know, if you go to the spin room, you can't go here, or you can't go to the spin room, and it's just very, very managed for organization because it gets entirely chaotic. But yeah, there was no way I was even going to get there by the time it was going to happen. So I think what we're going to do is we're probably going to do like a live chat, and I'm going to put details out. If you subscribe to the newsletter over at Chapter and Verse, I'm going to send you some details on how that's going to work because Substack has a new chat feature, which is going to be way better than how I had to do it previously, which is a little old school. So we're going to, I'm excited to kind of try that out and see how it works, but I'll send details to our subscribers. But the debate should be interesting. Now, I told you earlier, Fox is banned Trump surrogate since Trump is not going to be at the debate. So because he won't sign the, what is it? He said he doesn't need to debate and he won't sign the loyalty pledge. Okay. And then did Asha Hutchinson make it finally? Because I saw a list this morning where it said he did make it to the stage and you're going to promptly forget him. Kane, who was the guy? Was this during 2016? Was it one of the Democrat candidates that we just kept forgetting he was on stage? Oh, I'm sure, yeah. He participated in two debates and then he couldn't qualify for any more. We made so much fun of him. Oh my gosh, I can't even remember who it was. But his podium was always on the end because the way that they stack them, like the people with the highest are in the middle, the highest approval and polling, and then everyone else kind of is out, you know, to the periphery. And it was not going to happen.
Was it Gary Johnson? Wasn't that who
it was? No, because he was kind of kooky. And it was somebody who was super quiet. Wasn't him. Anyway, I think Asha Hutchinson is going to repeat that. He's going to kind of be like that guy. I just get that sense, don't you? Yeah. because he's, I don't know what he's doing. What are you doing? Really? Like, I don't know. I just, the whole thing is weird to me. But so far, it'll be DeSantis and Ramaswamy and Nikki Haley and Mike Pence. And I think that one guy, the Suarez guy, the mayor of Miami, who shut down Miami Beach and pretends to be a Republican and he's not, he told everyone he made the debate and he actually didn't. Like, he had a big announcement about it and he actually didn't make the debate. So I don't know what that was about, but, you know, it didn't happen. So he's not going to be there, but it'll be at the Pfizer Forum in Milwaukee. And that's, you know, the battleground state. They kind of were swinging back and forth a little bit. So, oh, and you got Tim Scott. Oh, Doug Burgum. Man, Doug Burgum and Asha Hutchinson are going to be competing to see who can be the quietest vanilla candidate there on stage. Just super inoffensive. Just, you know, everybody, you know, no objections. And I think Chris Christie, they say, is expected to be on stage. AP has the latest that he's going to be there. But he didn't sign the pledge, did he? Don't you have to sign that pledge to get on stage? Yeah, no, but I think he's going to be there. Does anybody know? Who knows? I don't care. Just put him in a parallelogram because you can't say octagon. So there, I want Christie to be there because him and DeSantis are going to argue. And Christie's going to try to be a hard ass. Did you see what he tweeted this morning? He got mad because apparently DeSantis said something that somebody else had said. Or some other, I don't even know what the whole point is. I'm like, that's the biggest thing you have? Like, you literally shut down a beach and then you got pictured sitting on it. Because remember when the government shut down? They had government shutdown? Chris Christie had to shut the beach. The sands closed. You guys remember that? He shut the damn beach and then he went and sat on it. And then when people gave him heat for it, he goes, well, you know, if you want to be able to get on the beach, and I suggest you run for governor and own beachfront property. That's literally what he told them. You know, man of the people and all. Jiminy Christmas, man. Golly. So I don't know. I just can't see it. I can't see him being in there. Now, here's a new thing that came in. Florida, they're looking at voter registration. This is something, if you can, look at it in your state. Republicans extended the registration lead over Democrats again. They have nearly a 30,000 lead gain in 1 month. What? I feel like kidnapping some of these people, making this happen, and bringing them to Texas. Okay, let's just pretend I didn't say that. But seriously, here, just between me and Kane, I really feel like we need to just kidnap these people, bring them here, and recreate that here.
I'll work on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know what, just don't tell anybody, you know, just shh. Anyway, we weren't talking about anything criminal. That actually is a major. That's huge. That is huge to be able to extend. And with all these moderates and independents as well. I mean, you prove you're able to do it there in Iowa. So looking at some of the Iowa stuff, you have Trump, who is in the lead with polling. Although I am a little concerned with 100% name recognition. It's barely above 40. And I look at DeSantis, he's got the highest favorability rating. That's very interesting. It's very interesting. And it's really a two-person primary. Nobody else comes close in this. Nobody else is even remotely close. I'm looking at some of the latest. This is just coming from Iowa, like the Des Moines Register. I have a piece from the Des Moines Register that I'm going to pull up here. But it is just looking at Iowa figures. So that's pretty good. And it's really the two of those. It's really Trump and DeSantis that performed really well. Now, the other thing that, and this is coming from the Des Moines Register, they say that it shows that DeSantis has a lane in Iowa. His Iowa footprint is only 2 points behind Trump, from 61% to 63%. Now, how do they gain? What's the footprint and how is that tallied? It's when you add together the people who say that, you know, this candidate is their first choice for president, and then people who say that this candidate is their second choice and they're actively considering supporting the candidate, they That's how it's figured together to form the footprint of that candidate. So this is a new poll that came out. It was conducted August 3rd, 13th through the 17th. And now the margin of error, I think the margin of error is high. It's 4 points. But I also think it's probably, I also think that state polls are more correct. And I think that they have a vested interest in a more accurate measure. Because they are measuring, I will say, and this is the one time I'll say this, especially if a media entity, a state media entity does it, it's the one time that they're actually trying to measure voter sentiment as opposed to pushing narratives with the that's what national polls are doing now. National polls are going to be doing this until the race winnows down. So for the national stuff, I don't give a rat's ass about national polls, because it's especially some of the firms, you have to realize a lot of the firms are basically PR companies for candidates. Like candidates will hire firms, they work with firms, they'll promise them business, all this other stuff, and they can do push polling, and they can, you know, survey specific areas to get the headline that they want and have people run with it so that it creates a narrative. It gets factored into the polling averages. So it's kind of a shell game a little bit. That's why state polling at this level is way much more accurate and trustworthy than the national stuff. So that is what this is what I'm looking at. I'm looking at favorability. I'm looking at footprint. And so this is, I think that's important. Now, here's the other thing. So they have 66% of Trump supporters in Iowa say their mind's made up. But it's 36% that say they could still change their minds. That's significant, too. So, I mean, he's the incumbent. He was in the White House. That's, you know. Well, he's not the incumbent now, but he was in the White House. But I do think that there is a limitation there. 100% name recognition, 40, almost 43% approval, but with your footprint, you're only 2 points ahead of second place. That's very interesting. So keep an eye on that. And just as we look at this for Iowa, we'll look at this for New Hampshire and some of these other states as well. Now, Chris Christie, he was very, as I said, he was very, very mad about some of this stuff. He was talking about, he didn't like the fact that DeSantis had said that. I think he's been limiting all of his fire on Trump and DeSantis. And I'm wondering, is he leaving himself open for like Nikki Haley to shiv him politically? You know, that's not a dust up that I expect. But now I'm thinking about it. Because if she sees him as being in her way, she'll take a rhetorical shiv to him. You can't count her for that. It's going to be, I love gaming this out. We're going to talk more about this. We also have Missouri's AG going to be joining us as well for a quick Q&A.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Can't believe I'm saying this headline. So the CDC is advising against kissing and cuddling pet turtles due to a salmonella outbreak. Yes, the NBC Channel 5 out of Cleveland says that the CDC is telling you to don't French kiss your turtle, guys, because salmonella. Or cuddle it. Just, 11 states they said have been impacted by an outbreak because people are cuddling or kissing turtles. They said the main cause for this is the illegal sale of turtles with shells that are fewer than four inches, according to CDC. They said the turtles were federally banned after causing many illnesses. People still sell them like on roadside stands online. I just thought that if it's a reptile, you don't be touching all over it and then touching your mouth or touch your mouth to it, right? Isn't that kind of common knowledge? Because they got salmonella. It's a reptile, isn't it? It's got salmonella. So stop it. I feel like Bob Newhart in that one SNL skit. Just stop it. Stop it. So this says IV hydration is a thing. More Phoenix area businesses are offering IV hydration because of excessive heat. So do you think it's a real thing or just bougie?
It used to be bougie. But I know that hospitals do it all the time. If somebody's dehydrated, they just IV.
Yeah, if you're
you
in
up.
The hospital, but right. Like if you're just like walking around. And
but it is. It used to be a bougie thing, but it's now more. They infuse vitamins that way as well. So
I used to get a vitamin drip. Yeah, vitamin drips were amazing. I could go out in the parking lot and throw cars around like the Hulk without the anger or the greenness. But they said that people come in for a pick-me-up during excessive heat, and they said that it perks you up. You could also drink water. You know, that does that work as well, Kane? Drinking the water?
You need the right minerals to do that, but yeah, it could work.
Like, what if you're like Brondo, as stuff plants crave, right? Does that work too?
I don't know if that works.
Okay. A woman's finger was severed by a library book drop. Don't ever return your books, guys. She says she was in shock. The bandages on her finger are insane. So Bobby Haverly, she was returning her library book. She's being a good person. Mount Dora, Florida. The Dropbox cut her finger off. It was Friday afternoon. Middle finger. That's a valuable one. Chopped off above the top knuckle. She checked out book into the Dropbox. And she says it hit an artery, so there was blood squirting everywhere. Oh, my gosh. Well, that book is ruined. She said she was in shock and that she was a registered nurse, so thankfully she knew what to do. So she told the staff to get her fingertip out, put it in ice. She said there was so much blood that it was terrifying everybody. They were unable to reattach her finger due to multiple severed nerve endings. They actually had to take more of her finger off because it was cut off diagonally, and they said they had to cut it off straight to allow the skin to grow back. So that's crazy. All right, coming up next, Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. He's in court this week on puberty blockers. We're going to talk to him next. Stick with us.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of this third hour, and you can listen coast to coast. You can also stream the radio program, watch the simulcast, YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV as well. We were talking about how, like, for instance, some of the mask mandates, there's just this all-out assault on the welfare of youth, whether it is, you know, what we saw with Rutgers and this Atlanta hospital or the puberty blocker stuff, which we're going to talk about. Everywhere you look, parents are having to step up, politicians stepping up, lawmakers stepping up to try to intervene on behalf of kids who really have a lot of, I would say, disingenuous actors working really, really hard to try to usurp the authority of parents to influence these kids. And we had, now as kids are going back to school this week, everyone's been talking about the mask mandates. Rutgers, as I said, they're having one in Atlanta, another Atlanta school requiring masks. Rutgers is also requiring vaccines. And then now you got businesses out in California and others. It seems like it's slowly creeping back. And to talk about this and then get into some of this other stuff, Missouri's ban on gender mutilation is really what we're calling it. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey joins us. And I think you're in every legal fight. I think I touched like everything that I just mentioned. You are in a legal fight about it right now. Welcome to the show. It's good to have you back. I just wanted to get your thoughts real quick on some of these mask mandates and this other stuff that's creeping back because they say, oh, there's a new variant. It's probably super infectious. Everybody's got to cover up again. They're pushing it.
Oh, they absolutely are. They hate freedom. But here in Missouri, we're going to fight to protect freedom. We're always going to put freedom first. Those are individual decisions. Those aren't government decisions. And no unelected bureaucrats are going to mask our children or anyone else in the state of Missouri as long as I'm AG.
It's amazing to me that even after all of the data that we have gotten over the past several years of how detrimental all of that was to young kids in schools, I mean, it set kids back academically, even just having faces covered with language, et cetera, that we're actually going to consider doing it again. And based on just as little evidence as we had last time with this new variant, if they try that Missouri, I mean, you're ready to stop it.
Ready, willing, and able to step up, say no, and fight back and use the court process to do exactly that. Again, we're going to put freedom first here in the state of Missouri. Individuals are capable of making their own healthcare decisions absent government intervention. And I would also point out that, you know, when it comes to the left's attack on our freedom, it's never about truth. It's always about power. They don't care what's actually working or not. They care about controlling our lives. And that, you know, there's a reason I don't live in North Korea. Our founding fathers are turning over in their graves that we would so quickly, hand over this legacy of freedom that's been passed down to us by previous generations because there's a new illness, a virus. And certainly it's in times of crisis that we must remain most vigilant to protect our constitutional rights. The Constitution exists to protect us from government. The government exists to protect our rights. And that's what I'm going to do as long as I'm working in the government as the state's attorney general.
There you go. Talking Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. So I know that you're in court today. This has been a lawsuit that has been covering this judge that's going to determine whether or not to block the new restrictions on gender mutilation. I don't like to say the word gender affirming because I'm like, if you're affirming, why do you need to affirm anything? It's experimental, unnecessary, medically unnecessary surgery for youth. This is something that they're this judge is considering. You're in court about it because looking at my notes, it bars puberty blockers, etc., this hormonal abuse. Tell us about this, because I don't see how anyone can argue, how the state could argue that this is informed consent, or any state. Like in California, they try to push this. Oregon, it's not informed consent because there's no long-term studies that show what happened after kids are subjected to hormonal abuse, or even what that looks like after they've had this unnecessary surgery, the care.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's not healthcare at all. It's sterilization of children who are suffering from gender dysphoria. And I'm all about protecting children. I want Missouri to be the safest state in the nation for children. I'm a parent. I'm a foster parent who's adopted children out of the foster care system because I have a heart for protecting children. I've dedicated my professional career to it. And that's what defending this statute's all about. I would also point out that, you know, at the end of the day, in our Republican democracy, when our General Assembly passes a statute and the governor signs it into law, that's two branches of government saying it's constitutional. So the court should be really deferential to this policy position that's codified in statute by the policy branches of government. I would also point out that what the other side is arguing is that there's a constitutional right to sterilize kids. That doesn't appear in the Constitution anywhere. And the other point I would make is that the Equal Protection Clause, which is the basis of their claim, the jurisprudence for the past 100 years on the Equal Protection Clause is based on immutable characteristics. And yet the plaintiffs are arguing that gender is mutable. It undermines their own legal position. And that's why having a full hearing on the matter was so important to us, to shine the light of truth on this abomination and point out that this is nothing short of the attempt to sterilize kids. And we're going to stand up and fight to protect kids in the state of Missouri.
So as I understand it, if the law is able to take effect, the restrictions on hormonal abuse, again, I don't know how people, I'm not using the language of the media. It's not hormonal therapy. They have no idea what this does. The restrictions on hormonal abuse, the puberty blockers, all of that, that expires in 2027. The ban on the medically unnecessary surgery does not expire. What could happen? So this law takes effect because, you know, we had the hospitals in St. Louis. I mean, it's my and Kane's hometown. We saw these medical facilities that were presenting this stuff as actual medical care when it's clearly not. What happens for those medical professionals that still engage in this experimentation?
Well, they're subject to a civil suit. They're subject to a punishment on licensure. They're not covered by the Medicaid state program. And so there's a lot of different penalties that we can use to go after folks that continue to abuse children after this ban on the sterilization of children goes into effect. But again, to your point, I mean, that's why we're fighting so hard in court and why it was so important to actually put on evidence and call live witnesses and make the plaintiff prove their case by putting on live witnesses. When we cross-examined the so-called experts from the other side, they had to admit exactly what you're positing, that there's no science to back this up. And any reports they were relying on are based on pseudoscience, and they completely neglected to look at the studies out of Europe that showed how dangerous and irreversible and deleterious the consequences were from these kinds of procedures. So again, it's about getting an open court and putting people on the record and making them own this and own the fact that it's not based on science. And so again, I you know, our hope and expectation is that the court will be deferential to the policy position codified in state statute that expresses the will of the people through their elected representatives.
You know, Kane said something to you on break when we were getting all set up. It's crazy that people are fighting you on this, that anyone is actually fighting to do this to kids.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, they love a utopian ideology more than they love children, because they're putting the practical good of children as a backseat to some woke left-wing agenda. We're not going to let them experiment on kids here in the state of Missouri. I mean, how dare anyone tell these kids that God put them in the wrong body? We know he doesn't make
mistakes.
That's
body shaming. They're body shaming them.
That's right. Now, if somebody did that on Twitter, you know, we would be lambasted for that. And yet it's okay for these woke left-wing ideologues to experiment on kids and harm them for the rest of their life, completely alter the course of their life to where they can't enjoy, you know, aspects of adulthood that are reserved to adults because of decisions their parents and other folks made for them. It's absolutely ridiculous. I can't consent to my 5-year-old riding the front seat of my car because it's too dangerous. And yet somehow these folks want to be able to consent to their kids being sterilized. I mean, again, it's absolutely absurd that we live in this world, but I've dedicated my professional career to fighting to protect kids, and I'm not going to stop now.
There you go. We're talking to Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey on the puberty blocker suit that he's involved in right now. I also wanted to touch on two things, because I want to hit the social media thing that you're still involved in. The president, he's got the student loan the forcing taxpayers, except for small payments of I'm getting into some of the details here. They're looking at borrowers would pay zero, the cost of student loans, forcing taxpayers to cover all of this. It really is falling down to, ultimately, attorney generals of every single state to step up, step into the void and protect taxpayers from this. What are you doing in Missouri?
Well, we fought Joe Biden. We're not going to let him stick working Missouri families with Ivy League debt. That would have cost the state of Missouri $44 million. We took that first round all the way up to United States Supreme Court and were able to deliver a win to protect working Missouri families from being stuck with Ivy League debt that Joe Biden wants to saddle them with. And look, at the end of the day, it's about the rule of law and the constitutionality. Congress has the power of the purse, and the statutes do not authorize the president to redistribute wealth in this manner. And certainly we've held him accountable in the past and will continue to do so. But to your point, I mean, the Biden administration has the attitude that they get to do whatever they want until someone tells them to stop. And you're right. It's state attorneys general, Republican attorneys general, who I'm proud to partner with and have partnered with numerous times across a spectrum of different issues, that go to court and hold President Biden accountable and defend the rest of us from these this usurpation of power that was never granted to President Biden.
Yeah, that's very true. Last question for you, Missouri v. Biden. This is a huge case for people who are unaware, which I don't know how they would be, especially if they're involved in social media. The lawsuit against the administration that details really how the federal government's been working with the tech bros, working with social media companies to violate the rights of free speech. I mean, they're using them as state agents. Talk to us about this, because I know you're awaiting the ruling from the Fifth Circuit, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I would say the verb I would use is the federal government coerced and demanded big tech social media silence conservative voices. It was viewpoint discrimination. We proved that in court. And we have to build a wall of separation between tech and state. The first brick of that wall was laid on July 4th when the district court sided with us based on the evidence we put on and ordered the Department of Justice and federal officials to stop violating Americans' First Amendment rights on big tech. The DOJ appealed. They think they have to be able to do this in the future, that they'll suffer irreparable harm if they aren't allowed to coerce big tech social media into viewpoint discrimination. And so we're at the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. The court expressed skepticism of the Department of Justice's position, and I'm confident in the ultimate outcome of that case. We expect a ruling within the next 20 days or so.
Oh, and we're excited for that one. And I have a feeling we'll probably be talking to you again when that comes down. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, always a pleasure, sir. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time today. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
We have more to come as we wrap up this third hour of programming. And tomorrow's the big debate day. So, you know, we're going to be doing debate, like we'll get you set up for the debate, the debate pre-show. And then we're going to also wrap up everything with a debate.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
And I know this game comes up, Caitlin, every time there's an outsider who comes in.
It leaves the door open, and someone who's a 9/11 truther looks at that and says, that's exactly what I believe. You think the government's lying about 9/11?
I think the government has systematically and for a very long time lied about 9/11. And I think I'm the only president who came in and has told us the truth. Saudi Arabia's involvement. It is absolutely true.
But you don't think that 9/11 was an inside job, correct?
Of course not. And I've never said it.
So this was Vivek Ramaswamy talking to Caitlin Collins and CNN. I do think it's really weird that CNN is like suddenly upset over 9/11 trutherism, considering they had Van Jones, who was an admitted 9/11 truther, on staff for so long. But he like made a mess of this for himself. And let me, and you're going to get this in the second part of the Will the Real Vivek Please Stand Up. Today, part one came out last night. Part two comes out today. And the reason that he kind of made a mess of this for himself is he was giving this interview, and I feel like he was just kind of, he got too comfortable and got a little too casual with the interviewer and started talking about, he was talking about J6 stuff. And it was with The Atlantic, and he was wondering how many federal agents participated in terror attacks while trying to draw like a comparison to J6. He said, quote, "I think it is legitimate to say how many police, how many federal agents were on the planes that hit the Twin Towers. Maybe the answer is zero. It probably is zero for all I know, right? I have no reason to think it was anything other than zero. But if we're doing a comprehensive assessment of what happened, we have the commission. Absolutely. That should be an answer that the public knows the answer to. Well, if we're doing a J6 commission, I mean, why are... And then he had previously told The Blaze that he wants the truth on 9/11. I just don't know why you would. Why are you comparing this? Why are you being baited into comparing this? Can I be honest? He's been on the show twice. Politics does not have to be personal. Okay. I don't think the guy is that great of a debater. I think that he's just very well prepared. And there's a difference in being very well prepared and being a very good debater. If you're a very good debater, you are going to be able to finesse and finagle and use all your rhetorical talents to massage a conversation so that you are best at the advantage. Being prepared does not necessarily lend itself to that skill. And I think that he's very prepared for sure, but I also think that you can throw him easily. And he has a ton of tells. He gets very nervous and it comes across, especially in a one-on-one setting. And he's not used to being challenged in that way. But he's not a bad speaker. But I don't know. I think he's preparing and he's trying to set himself up as not caring, you know, as to he's not concerned about anything with the debate. But I think on something like this, he can't be that casual. And you have to be very, don't create a problem for yourself because you didn't speak to it well. I mean, I do radio for 3 hours a day every day and I've done it for a decade. You got to know this stuff. You got to be very careful with how, especially stuff like this. I'm just saying. Now, there were a couple of articles saying, oh, well, Trump was rumored to have cut a deal with him to be the stalking horse for the primary. I'm wondering, though. Like, I'm just saying this to speculate. And I'll speculate about everybody. What if it's not Trump? What if it's pharma?
That would make sense.
I mean, think about it. I mean, he just stepped down as CEO of the Roivant Sciences in February. They got a stake in, he still has stake in the company. They have Chinese subsidiaries, and they're suing Moderna and Pfizer over some of the mRNA stuff. I'm just saying, it sounds a little Occam's razor, you know?
It's weird how I can't get Vivek to come back on the show, though.
Yeah, I figured the... I'm paid to have opinions. I'm not paid to sit here and pat. I was going to say something else, but I'm going to be above board about it.
Thank you.
I was going to say, Kane, I'm not paid to politicians.
Right.
Hug them.
That's right.
Yeah. So, you okay over there?
I'm all right.
Signatures. All right. So, for the debate, I'm going to look at this feature on Substack because I think we might do like a live chat during the debate, which is always fun and super rowdy. I love the real rowdy ones that get in there. We've done this before. It's a great way to kind of watch some of this together. And of course, you know, I'm going to be on social as well, since I'm not going to be able to make the flight. I'm not going to be able to make it from the airport to the event in time, to the debate venue in time. So I don't think I'm going to be in Milwaukee. All right. I'll send out an email to subscribers on that. So make sure you sign up at Substack, Chapter and Verse. Today in Stupidity, Kane.
All right. It's our energy secretary, Jennifer Granholm. Apparently, there's no rational discussion of our energy future, which also doesn't discuss climate change. Listen to what she says here.
But really, to put it another way, there is no rational discussion of our energy future.
Why?
Which is not also about climate change. And there's no serious discussion about climate change, which is not also about energy.
Oh. Do you understand what she's meaning by that?
Did Kamala write this? Kamala?
It sounds like Kamala's speechwriter wrote it.
If she would have slipped in a Unburdened by What Has Been, I would have said, I would have called her a plagiarist.
Bro.
Super sus, bro. That does it for us today, folks. I hope you have a great rest of your day. Tomorrow is the debate. We're going to get y'all set up. And make sure you subscribe over at Substack. Find us on YouTube, Facebook, like, and subscribe. I'll be back with you tomorrow.